Today we're going to begin our discussion of the Joan Stumbaugh book, Impermanence is Buddha Nature. And I wanted to try to give some background and a framework for that discussion, because I realize it could be a daunting text for many of you. And it's may not be immediately clear why in this discussion of Dogen we begin with this discussion of pantheism and the nature of God and how all that's going to connect. To Buddha nature and impermanence. And the way I figured we could begin to think about sort of the rhetorical strategy of the book, why it begins the way it does, is that we're trying to understand things that Buddhism presents as seeming opposites, but which in reality or for a certain perspective are inseparable. The most famous, in a way, in the Heart Sutra is form and emptiness. We start with these two categories, which seem like they are diametrically opposed to one another. Form is substance, is things. Emptiness we think of as precisely the absence of things. But the Heart Sutra says form is exactly emptiness. Emptiness is exactly form. Well, how is that possible? It's possible when we look deeply into the nature of things, we see that they're always changing, that they have no inner core or essence of something that is unchanging, whether it changes through time. But that the things are empty of any permanent essential aspect. And that's true whether we're talking about a table, a chair, or something like the self. It is simultaneously an object in the room, and yet as an object, it is subject to continual change, and there is no unchanging inner core or aspect to it. So it is simultaneously both a thing and empty. Now that kind of paired dichotomy I've referred to as the duck-rabbit problem. That you have one thing that you can see from two different aspects, and depending from which perspective you're looking, it seems like you've got two very different animals. But it's actually a single squiggle, single outline. And one of the ways we can think about Stumbaugh's project is to say one way to try to get a handle on the very unique duck rabbits found in Buddhism, and particularly in Dogen, is to compare them to some of the more familiar duck rabbits that we have in the West, and see that there's a family resemblance between them, that the problem has a kind of familiar aspect to us in Western religion and philosophy. And so she's going to use that kind of comparison as a way in. And in the West, the kinds of paired opposites that we have to deal with or have had to deal with historically start with things like God and the world. What is their relation, right? Is God separate from the world or part of it? If he's separate, does he interact? If he's part of it, what does it mean for him to be God? Versions of this show up in the question of, if God is all good and all powerful, how is it that the world seems so imperfect and full of evil and suffering? We take two things that we believe are almost by definition the case, the nature of God and the nature of the world, and we're stuck trying to resolve an apparent contradiction. If we take it out of the realm of religion, a very familiar one these days is the problem of determinism versus free will. On one hand, we seem to have a description of the world that follows rigid, causal, deterministic rules. It's a billiard ball universe, right? One thing exerts a force on another, and you have this whole sequence of determined causal events. That description of things seems unchallengeable. And yet, from another perspective, we have the experience of choice and free will, and we have ethical decisions and judgments. It does not seem possible to think about who we are or how we live and go about our life without using the language of choice and responsibility. And yet we don't know how to have that intersect with the description of the deterministic universe. In philosophical terms, particularly in German philosophy and from the 18th century on, this got described in terms of the world in itself versus the world for itself. In itself being things just as they are in this physical deterministic world, and for itself being the realm of subjectivity and freedom and choice. And how are they going to interact? We get another one of these duck rabbits in the distinction of appearance versus reality. We begin to recognize that we see things from our own particular perspective, a perspective that can be historical or cultural or just even biological, that we perceive certain wavelengths of light and not others. So at some level, our interaction from the world is always mediated through some kind of perceptual apparatus or another, comes to us in some perspective. But what is it a perspective on? What is the world separate from our perspective on it? Again, that's asking, what is the thing in itself? And can we ever know it? If all we ever see are our own perceptions, how do we know that the world is actually out there? How do we know that it's not all a big dream or hallucination? How do we not, instead of there being rocks and trees, how, maybe I'm just lying on a beach and dreaming it all, hallucinating it all. How could I ever tell or test it? In any case, the point is that in Western religion and philosophy, we also are always confronting these kinds of apparent dichotomies that we are challenged to reconcile and see how one thing can show itself in these two different aspects. And if form and emptiness are basic ones in Buddhism, we're also confronted with the traditional versions of samsara and nirvana, the world of clinging, attachment, the self-centered dream world, and this world of awakening. So this, again, the question is this one world or two? Part of what Stamba outlines is the shift in Buddhism, roughly from a Theravadan to a Mahayana perspective, going from a view of there being really two kinds of worlds, the world that we actually live in and another transcendent world, or a nirvana that's somehow an exit from this world into a whole other transcendent state. What can that mean? What would that look like? In some ways, it's a correspondence between a Western picture of this life and then an afterlife, two different realms. The Mahayana revolution, you could say, was to collapse that dichotomy. She's quoting Nagarjuna, is talking about the identity of samsara and nirvana. What does that mean? It's very much like the duck-rabbit dichotomy regarding the self and the true self. The self being supposedly this delusional construct somehow operating inside our heads, in which we imagine ourselves as permanent egos looking out onto a world. In one version of things, we realize that self is non-existent, is empty. Is no self, and we discover instead a true self. What is that? Is that another self? Is there a different self? That when we scrape this false one off, we uncover the real one underneath? See, that is another kind of duck-rabbit dichotomy, a false self and a true self. One of the ways to resolve the apparent contradiction is to say that what we do in practice is to discover the truth about the self, not discover a true self. That when we see what the self actually is, that the self is empty, that the self is changing and interdependent, we see that that's the true nature of the self. But what we're seeing is something that the self has been all along. It's not that it suddenly becomes empty and interdependent. It's that we realize that what we took to be something solid and autonomous and unchanging has actually had this whole other aspect to it, empty and interdependent. We haven't discovered anything new in the sense of a new entity or object or essence deep inside. What we've done is suddenly see that the duck is a rabbit. It also can be seen as a rabbit, right? It's been there all along, but it's an aspect that we overlook. For Dogen, his particular duck-rabbit obsession had to do with the dichotomy between original enlightenment and the experience of realization. Original enlightenment says the self has always been empty and interdependent. That our Buddha nature has always been there from the very beginning. It's not something we suddenly discover or manufacture or uncover. It's the way everything already is. How is it that we don't recognize that? What is it that we have to do in order to realize that? If it's already been there all this time, why is it that we all have to practice so hard for so many years? So he starts out with this dilemma of the relationship between practice and realization. And he begins with our ordinary sense of we practice in order to realize something that we've been missing. He inherits this picture of practice as a means to an end, of practice as something we do in order to have a realization. And yet, when he actually has a realization, his whole picture of what practice is and was shifts. And he sees practice as inseparable from realization, not as a separate means to an end, but as the manifestation of realization. He sees the duck and the rabbit have been one thing all along. Now, part of what we're going to see in Dogen is this kind of interplay between seeming opposites. And impermanence and Buddha nature are just in a way, the ones that are being foregrounded here among a whole set of different possibilities, where Buddha nature seems to be something otherworldly or transcendent or permanent or perfect, and in impermanence, a characteristic of this imperfect, changing world of suffering that we are endeavoring to escape from through our practice. How are we going to bring those two into relation to one another? And part of what she talks about here is how even the whole notion of relation is wrong, because it presumes two different things. What's the relation between the duck and the rabbit? Well, they're not, they're really the same thing, and yet they are clearly also different. How do you talk about their relationship? Where does that exist? It's part of what we're dealing with here with the Buddha nature and impermanence, that kind of duck-rabbit interpenetration. Now, it may seem that this complex comparative study of the family resemblance of duck rabbits east and west is a fairly idiosyncratic way to proceed to understand Dogen. But I think that we should also understand that this is not Stambaugh's idea to be doing it this way. That in fact, this comparative style comes from the Japanese, not something we're bringing to them. There is a whole philosophical tradition beginning around the First World War in Japan, a group of philosophers who became known as the Kyoto School, who were trying, as part of the modernization of Japan, to integrate particularly the philosophical insights of Zen with Western philosophy. They were trying to build that bridge, in a sense, so that Japanese philosophy would be taken seriously by the West and not simply be kept in the category of religion. So that for them, Zen occupied this kind of pivot point between religion and philosophy, somewhat like the way someone like Kierkegaard occupies or straddles religion and philosophy in the West, or you could say how Aquinas was trying to integrate both the philosophy of Aristotle and the theology of Christianity into one coherent system. And so this Kyoto group of philosophers was trying to build a bridge to Western philosophy, and they picked on this idea of, or centered on the idea of emptiness or nothingness as a kind of bridge term that they thought could connect particularly to a philosopher like Heidegger. And one of the prominent Japanese philosophers, Nishitari, actually came to Germany and studied with Heidegger in the late 30s for a couple of years before going back to Japan. So the bridge between Dogen and Heidegger is not one that Stambaugh is making up as a way to try to understand Dogen. It's a bridge that the Japanese themselves tried to create in order to have the West have some notion of what was going on in Zen Buddhism. And it may be at some point we'll follow up our reading with a representative of that school. I would think maybe Masao Abe is the most contemporary and readable of that group, from what I've delved into it. We'll see as we go along. But it helps to know that this connection is one that starts from the Japanese side. It's not just a strange analogy that this Western philosopher is trying to draw. All right, I think I have to leave it there for now. We will see where we can take this in the discussion group.